morning again, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of FarmCon Conversations podcast. Todd Leckler here with my good friend Kevin Van Trump. Kevin, good morning.
How are you, Todd?
I'm doing well, brother. I would like to give you the initial floor. Anything super exciting happened over the weekend in the Van Trump family or auctions?
No, not really. Nothing crazy out of the norm. I guess I should say one thing. I did tell you, remember last week, Golden had called me, the auction house, and wanted me to send in some cards for some of their upcoming auctions, as most of you know.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I said I would send, they sent me a list of stuff they'd wanted and this, that, and the other. I said, sure, I'd send it up. They were going to send me a call tag with a mailing label for overnighting it through UPS. Oh, probably somewhere in $250, $300 some thousand dollars worth of cards. They had me film it. So I'm filming, putting the cards in the box. They had me use this tape that is a tamper-proof tape that I have to put on the box with the label. Then they tell me I film it when I hand deliver it to the people at the UPS store and get my receipt there. And from there, you know, it's in their hands and it's the way it goes. Well, guess what? You got it. Box got lost, stolen, or somehow disappeared. So they don't have it at Golden up in New York. People here, UPS, you know, the tracking saying, I don't know, it made it first step and then it's gone. But the interesting part, why I probably wanted to just tell folks, is I've heard this happening quite a bit as of late. I've had a few other friends who received cards in the mail or were supposed to receive cards in the mail that they had won in a pack breaks or they had purchased or things like that. Gone, stolen, missing. So I'm just telling folks, be careful out there. I don't know how this is going to come out on this end. I'm a little nervous about it because, like I said, everybody's got alligator arms all of a sudden, and they everybody's hands off, and now I'm here, the guy with nothing, and I don't know. So it's going to be interesting to see. Like I said, so
you've been doing this for years. I mean, you've been using these type of services for years, have you not? And this is the first time something like this has happened to this extent.
I've sold high value cards through Golden, Fanatics, and used to be PWCC. There's several places through the year. You know, back way when I was a kid as a Sports Collector Digest, I ran ads, did different things. Yeah, but, you know, I suspect nowadays, you know, with the way this craziness has gone on these cards, I mean, like, so many cards are millions of dollars. I'm talking millions of dollars, Pokemon or all this stuff. I just think people are going to notice and see the address. I don't know. I don't know how those companies do it, but yeah, Todd, I've done this in the past. I've nothing like this, but I'm telling you, just in the last 6 months, I've heard more and more stories and more talk that there's either organized crime rate or there's people somehow infiltrating the Postal Service, the UPS, the other places, and there's more of this stuff being picked off and sniped off. Yeah. And I'm just telling everyone, be careful using the mail anymore for some of this. And one of my buddies said to me, he's like, hey, you just want you want to pay one of my guys, and they'll just fly it up there for you and deliver it. And I said, no, I got to do that. I've sent cards like this before, plenty of cards like this before. It'll be fine. Sure as shit, you know, it's what I should have done.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I'd
say if you start dealing some of that high, because UPS only has a guarantee on a package of $50,000.
Really? Wow.
And Golden got bought by eBay, you know, a year or two ago. And so eBay supposedly is self-insuring this thing, but we're going to see. And, you know, you're not going to get auction prices. I'm sure the insurance company is going to try and beat the hell out of me and not pay me near the value of what it would have gone for an auction. So it's just going to be a bad deal probably. And
yeah.
It's unfortunate, but this is the world we live in. So
no, it is.
I think you got to be careful here and just hopefully I can help somebody avoid the mistake I made. And if anybody had any questions or, you know, feel free to reach out to us and I'll help in any way I can, tell you my experiences with it also. Definitely interesting.
That story just matches my dog on TikTok yesterday, because you can have a great process, which you did, and the outcome could still be crap, which it was. And it's just, it's nuts in that regard.
Yeah, and probably, And probably my only saving grace, Todd, is that I went through and I did film it all. You know, I had Michelle filming me putting each card in the box and then sealing the box. And, you know, and like my lawyer said, probably if I hadn't done that, I mean, I'd really be shit out of luck probably. And so I don't know. It's just crazy. Like I said, crazy, crazy world. So just make sure you dot your I's and cross your T's and watch every step along the way in today's world.
Well, I appreciate sharing that, and hopefully someone's going to benefit from that. And hell, it may even open up a new avenue of future jobs for courier services, like your buddy said. Yeah. I mean, that's just crazy. That's crazy. To kind of. Well, listen, I wanted to share before we get into the corn, bean, and wheat. You know, we just finalized some of our FarmCount 27 packages, sent everything out to everybody, full steam ahead, and we are filling up. And, dude, we just got – I just thought of it, Kevin. We're just over 4 months away, which is nuts. So I'm today just – giving a shout-out reminder to all your agribusiness operators and executives out there that there is not a more valuable turnkey customer appreciation event and experience for your book of business. So if you're tired of doing the same old thing and figuring out trying to say thank you, step it up this year, make it unforgettable, give us a holler at farmcotton.com to learn more. That kind of sounds like one of those professional podcaster commercials right there. Anyway, anything you want to add, it's going well. About full up on sponsors, tables are filling up. So if you're making plans, just do it. Don't put it off. There's no reason to wait.
I agree. I think this year, you know, I'd say if there's any year you're going to, I think this is the one to attend because I'm going to make a special offer to the group that shows up being a part of a little bit of our exclusive community that we're trying to build out. And I think a lot of folks would like to be a part of that and have asked about that in years past. And we just, you know, like I said, haven't had the capacity or haven't had the bandwidth to really pull it off, but we're going to get that. We're going to have that all in place and structured up. And so, yeah, this will be the inaugural year to kind of join that group. And the reason I'm really pressing, Todd, on getting this group formed of people that come to FarmCon is I think there's just power in numbers of humans, and we're going to need those. We're going to need to be in a group to be able to see around corners better and to be able to really try to battle this AI and think to try and gain an edge over AI, I guess, to some degree, because like I said, you know, everybody's going to have the AI tools and this, that, and the other, but you know, how do you see around corners and how do you really gain an edge in life? And it's by having multiple perspectives. And if we can form this group that we're going to talk about and kick off at FarmCon, I think longer term, it's going to give all of us one heck of an edge moving forward over some of the competition and some of the things. So I'm excited about launching that this year at FarmCon. We'll talk more about that in upcoming podcast.
You've shared with me, and I look forward to, as you develop it out and get it finalized, that we can share some ahead of time, because there's some interesting topics that you just touched on that we need to go deeper into.
Yep.
So moving on to corn, bean, and wheat, the commentary and market insights shared on this podcast are for educational purposes only and are not trading, hedging, or investment advice. Futures and options involve significant risk, so please consult your professional advisor before making financial decisions. Kevin, do you want to start with, you snuck some sales in on Sunday night, and then we go, I got a bunch of corn questions. You'll probably end up answering once you start talking, but you made a move Sunday night. Tell us why. Tell us what.
Oh, well, you know, we had a resting order out there. I told people for hell, we think we've been looking at the last few months. We thought we'd probably price them up in that 510, 520 area, you know, if the market got back to try and touch those highs. I had some resting orders sitting out there at 520, got triggered, made some sales. So, you know, do I think we could go to 540? Sure, why not? But like I said in Monday's report, I don't like getting into the guessing game on this yield game with the USDA, because it isn't about whether I'm right or Pro Farmer's right or the guy down the street's right. It's about what the USDA comes out with in their number. And I don't think you can get overly tripped up in trying to outguess what's going to happen there with the USDA. So, like I said, we'd had some sales targets in place, pulled the trigger, made some 2026 sales, made some 2027 sales. I like those numbers. Do I think we can go higher? Yeah. I mean, I kind of think I wrote in the last couple reports, you know, are we going to get a sub 175 yield? I don't know that. I mean, Todd, what are you hearing?
I'm not going that. No. I'm very comfortable saying 178, 179 in my mind right now. I'm not below 175.
And now let me ask you this question. And I always have this hang up with a lot of people. Are you thinking that's where the USDA will ultimately end up, or are you thinking
okay,
that's where the crop, I mean, because that's where I have a problem with a lot of these estimates that come out. Who gives a shit what the market moves based off what the USDA thinks. So, you know, these independent surveys and studies are fine, but ultimately you could be caught off sides by that if the USDA doesn't see things that same light. So I was excited to see the crop conditions come down this week again.
Right. Exactly. Finally.
So that probably, if those wouldn't have come down, I think the market would have been a little worse. Obviously, the market would be in worse shape. But I think you got to believe the USDA is going to probably come out and make a cut, right? I mean, they got to cut again here. And the question is how much and how far. So, you know, I think the big game is ultimately just trying to figure out where the USDA is going to land on total production. And I'm telling you, the last year or two, I've been bamboozled by the acreage numbers. Have gotten me a little squirreled up. So all I'm saying is I'm trying to be a little bit more aggressive with corn sales this year versus bean sales. That's obvious. So I'm a little bit more sold in corn, which maybe might not be the best play. I don't know. Time will tell. But, I like removing some of this risk, Todd, on the upswing. So I'll let you go ahead and ask your question.
Well, so, you know, you're still fundamentally bullish. The first thing I want to ask you, you're still fundamentally bullish corn, but you've got tactically cautious. You made the comment that you thought about shorting to Sunday night. So explain to folks how you can have both those stocks at the same time.
I thought the market would get a little goofy and on that Pro Farmer 173 night, and I thought, you know, we'd maybe trade limit up. I thought maybe Sunday night at some point, and we traded up to 520 something, and I thought, you know, it's always the way it works. And then because the number was so low at 173, I'm like, I think the bulls that get in on this number could start to be disappointed in the coming days and weeks, because the other numbers that come out may not be lower than that. So typically, the big bull markets, we've seen the number continue to drop, and people were coming out, you know, one worse. You know, so the StoneX, they would come out with 172, and then this, Informa, but now not Informa, hell, I don't know what that, but they'd come out with 170, and then we'd be down to 160, you know, and then the numbers would continue to go lower, would be how you would typically see a big bull market continue to attract new bullish money flow.
Right.
But if 173 is the actual low, or that 173.2 or whatever they come out with, if that ends up being the lowest number, you may have some disappointment from the bullish camp, and you may have a hard time attracting new bullish money flow. That's what my point was on that, is that the key to markets moving higher is the headlines are continuing to attract new money coming into the market, more and more buyers. And if you don't have those new and fresh headlines, you know, bulls have to eat more regularly than bears. Bears can hibernate, and bears will stay, you know, hibernated for a long time and don't have to have necessarily that headline flow. Bullish markets, to keep the momentum moving higher, need more continuous bullish headlines. And that's all I was saying. By them popping out that 173.2, it may anchor that supply side story, meaning there's nothing going to come out more bullish than that on the supply side. So now we kind of really are back again focusing on this demand side. And here I am in demand. And my thoughts are this. Ethanol's probably going nowhere. I mean, as far as up or down or much movement, you could say 50 bushels either side of the current number, 50 million bushels. I don't think it's going to be a big swinger either way. And then feed and residual, well, shit, it gets hard to think that the feed and residual number is going to increase in any way, shape, or form when you have elevated prices. People tend to start looking for alternatives or cutting back on feed and residual numbers. And there's already the looming thought out there from the bears that the feed and residual number could be 100 to 200 million bushels too high already. So I'm saying you're not going to get any help from feed and residual as corn prices move higher. You're probably not going to get much shift or change in ethanol if things move higher, you know, not much difference in price. And then you look at exports. Well, if prices move higher, I'm not so certain we're going to see a big uptick in exports, especially if we're going to see some ripples over this Middle East conflict that continues to rage. And maybe there are some wrinkles put in some of our trade deals. Not that a ton of the countries that do business with Iran are big buyers of U.S. corn, because I wrote that in the report this week. They're not. They're not big buyers, but they are a buyer of some U.S. corn. So all I'm saying is, it gets tougher at this level to think that there's going to be a big bullish demand story as prices rise. At the same time, it gets tough to talk much about a supply side bullish story because the cat's already out of the bag at 173. So, you know, if you're going to tell me we're going to be 170 or 168, now hell yeah, we're going higher. I mean, I think anything sub 165, or excuse me, I think anything sub 175 yield, there's definitely a chance prices, you know, can push to that 556 buck range, even maybe a little higher. So I just leave it at that. You know, if you think that the yield's going to end up below 175, there, you know, hey, there's probably a chance this thing could keep pushing just because you're going to really tighten the screws down on the balance sheet to some degree. But at the same time, the USDA is notorious for cutting demand back a little bit as those prices go higher. So if they drop the yield and take production out, they're probably going to have to cut back maybe on a little bit of that export. Maybe they might trim a little bit of ethanol, maybe a touch. Just saying that they tend to walk back demand a little bit as they drop production. So I would be careful thinking that it's just a runaway train to the upside on a 175, 178 yield. That's all I'm saying. Where prices are currently. So
I'm just wondering, because I agree with you. Okay, we got a floor at 173.2, but, and you said, you wrote Monday, you know, you paid for the experience of learning that markets can become disappointed even when news technically moves in the right direction. So I'm just wondering, because of the historical, I'm going to call it conservative USDA revisions, is it possible? I'm just trying to find that numbers on there. Let's say they come in next month and they drop three actual bushes. I mean, that'd be kind of huge for them. I mean, could that be just kind of a shock and still be bullish? Or you're saying it's nothing under one? It's got to be under 173 before we're going to bring in new bullish money.
No. I'm just saying, let's say the USDA makes a half bushel cut or makes a one bushel cut. You know, the bulls might be sitting there like, and that market doesn't move a whole lot because they're already expecting a lower number than that.
Right.
Isn't low, you know, and you could see some just people like, this dead money kind of sitting over here. And I'm talking to bigger fund players. And then they just take some money off the table, take some of their bullish bets off, and move it into another area. And that's all I'm saying. So all of a sudden you would start to see, you know, here's my thing too. You're still seeing a big carry in the market. I mean, you're still seeing what hell, you got March still trading at a decent carry, what a 14 cent carry to the D's, and cash basis aren't getting crazy. So what I would think is, if this is really going to take off to the upside, you'll see the cash basis start to really dramatically improve. I think you should see the deferred contracts are going to lose ground to the front. You're going to see that carry come out of the market, but we don't have that yet. I mean, and so I'm just a little hesitant. I'm just saying, I think a lot of the premium that's in here is war-based premium. Some of the, you know, the conflict in the Middle East premium. And, you know, obviously this downtick here in U.S. Yield. But I just don't know how much further that could go is what I'm trying to point out. It's been a hell of a buck we added here to the price stand there. And I think it's just prudent to reward the rally with some sales. And I'm not saying anything any different than everybody else is saying out there, I'm sure. So, you know, I think it just becomes that bad as we move forward. I mean, you're going to adjust production lower, and what's going to happen to demand? you know, that's kind of going to be the kicker here.
So you're not saying that we're at the most bullish sentiment. You're saying there's potentially some cards that can be turned over. We just got to wait and see.
Well, the only bullish cards that can be turned over from here is, like you said, you get the USDA down to what? Where the pro farmer was 173, and hell, we're off to the race. You know, then you are off.
Yeah, that would.
I mean, you're probably $6, like I said, or yeah, maybe even higher. Who knows? But I just don't. I don't know if the crop's going to be that low. I mean, that's all I'm saying. I don't. It's going to be hard for me to get there on the crop being that low, but maybe. And that was the interesting thing that I brought up on our call the other day, and we were all talking. I mean, that tour's squirreled me up a little bit in the fact that I love what they all go out and do, and I think it's great to have the intel and the info. I'm not sure I'm fully on board and understand the whole massaging of the numbers, though. I mean, why go out and take the pod count from the fields if you're going to massage the numbers at the end anyway? I mean, why even go through that whole rigmarole? I mean, if you're just going to come up with an arbitrary type of massaging. And it's hard for me to fully understand how you could see that much of a decrease on the corn side, but you forecast a record high soybean yield. I don't know. That one's tricky for me. But like I said, I don't put that much weight into any of those things anyway. So I'm, you know, I'm still thinking USDA needs to cut the soybean yield to some degree. There's a lot of wet feed. I'm not on board with the pro farmer soybean yield forecast. I don't think it's going higher. Maybe. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying I'm not on board with it.
Well,
I think the yield's got to work lower in both corn and beans. And, you know, does that create a bullish response? I think it does in beans if it works lower. I'm not sure if it works just conservatively lower in corn, it creates that much bullish response. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, totally. I'm with you, and I think there's plenty, but I'm unsure. I feel more confident speaking on the corn when I perceive yield, because I had guys telling me this month and a half ago what they thought from southeast Iowa, and they've been pretty good in the past telling me. So, anyway, yeah, I'm going upper 170, 8-9, and beans, I have no idea, because I think there may be some hidden stuff underneath the leaves. Just like they look good up in the road, but I think there may be some trouble that you were just potentially pointing out. So before we leave corn, though, sorry, man, I have to do this on the lighter side of things. You put that tweet in there today, or yesterday in the report from Grain Stats, and you headed it with, you know, thought this was funny, but I just want to bring it up and see if you're messaging anybody. Has Dave Ramsey on there and says, so you didn't sell a single bushel. Yes, Dave. And you believe it's going higher? Correct. Do you got bills to pay? Uh-huh. And then Dave's sitting there with his arms crossed. Is there any messages there?
No, well, yeah. I mean, hell, that's our life, right? I talk to people every day. That's the same story they always say. I mean, hey, where do you think this market's going? Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it could go a little bit higher. Huh, really? Oh, I probably won't make any sense. I know, but you were dying to make sales at I was talking to guys that were dying to make sales at 450 when we were down trading 420s, and it's like they didn't make the sale at 450 when they had a chance, and then you know we're definitely gonna make them 480, and then we get to 480, it's like, you think we can get to $5? Well, I don't know, maybe, you know, sure. Now maybe then we get to $5, it's like, oh well, here we are. Then we're at 520, and now they're moving a goalpost still. So, you know. I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. I mean,
we like to offer sound advice that works for us. And you, and I'm guessing you'd simply say, hey man, you got a feather in a couple sales and reward.
No, I don't offer any advice. Period. Zero. End of story. I offer no advice.
I apologize. I said that wrong.
Report the watch to be voyeuristic, and I tell them what I'm doing. I'm not offering advice to anybody. Just
my
to make sure.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying I don't like to
I used the wrong
that.
Word.
I definitely like to tell people what I'm doing and what we're doing, but, you know, they can make their moves off that however they see fit and want to make their moves, because that's what people should do. I think they should, you know, listen and try to learn what other people are doing and then take what other people are doing and then tailor that to fit their operations, their models, their whatever they need. I think you're a fool to follow anybody blindly. Anybody. I don't give a shit who they are. I mean,
no, you said that.
Everybody's operation, everything's different. That's, you know, that's where we get into that whole AI debate, you know, and I just.
I know. Which is,
I can't
it get think.
Cookie cutter in a lot of this stuff, and I just don't think that's right. I don't think I'm ever going to be better at marketing than somebody that's been on their property for multiple generations and have had people explain them and teach them things, you know, that I don't know. Let's say the art side of it. You know, that I'm never going to be able to be better than those people at any of that, than the people that are on their own property and know their own operation and know all their own things. You know, that's simply the facts. I mean, I can give an educated opinion about the markets and where they're at, but as far as the actual, you know, where, how much to store in your bins, you know, when to take it out, when to deliver it, where to deliver it, who to deliver it to, who you have the best relationship, who you want to keep that relationship with. I mean, there's just so many variables. I will never be better at that than the people that are actually out there doing it at their own operation, own field. So that's where I say, make sure you understand that fully, where your edge is. Your edge lies within that art on your farm, your individual farm. And if you give that edge away because you just want to follow some cookie cutter program or something, I mean, I think you're giving away your edge. So, okay,
all that said, 100% agree with you, but you still got to execute, pull the trigger at the time you say you're going to do it. We know that that doesn't always happen. Is executing an art or a science?
Trigger man's an art, for sure, no question.
Yeah, okay. But I agree with you.
But that's where people give that away. But people give that away. That's what I'm
trying
to tell you.
Right, I agree.
You know, but either by AI or by listening to something. I just had this conversation with the kids this week, I should say, and it was around a lot of different things. The kids are young and they're building their business, and they have a lot of people coming at them that are perceived experts, we'll call it. And this is just my theory now in life, so I hope it doesn't piss anyone off. But I tell the kids, so the kids had some lawyers come in that are trying to get all their back end HR stuff in place and, you know, how to do this, how to do that, da 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 da. Well, the kids were wanting one thing done. They were the lawyers kind of running their own play, and I just kind of snapped on the kids and I said, "Listen, this is where you got to grow up. This is where it all happens, and this is where you got to learn some shit." I said, "Just because someone's a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, a dentist, a self-perceived expert, right? Like we've been raised to put these people on pedestals and like these are the experts. That's fine. Just like the people that want to the follow us thing. Okay." But that doesn't mean you follow those people blindly. That doesn't mean you just do whatever those people say. No, you're paying those people to give you an opinion and to give you their opinion and their thought and idea. You then tell them, "Hey, I appreciate your thought and your opinion, and I gladly paid for that. Now I am going to think about that, and I'm going to decide whether I want to do that or not do that." I think so many people go to doctors and get talked into doing procedures, and I think they go to lawyers and get talked into doing things that they're not sure they really want to do, but the lawyer tells them to do it, and they get talked into doing things with their accountant or their tax, and they're not really sure if they want it in, and then they do. But I tell my kids, I'm like, I know plenty of people are sitting in jail because they listened to what their lawyer told them. I know plenty of people sitting in jail because they listened to what their accountant told them, and their accountants and the lawyers are off, you know, in the Bahamas somewhere. I know plenty of dead people have listened to their doctors too. And so I'm just saying, or just like in this business, listen to the trading, self-proclaimed trading experts. Great. All that's great. But you're the CEO of your business and your life. You are the CEO. These are just people that you have coming into your boardroom that are giving you their opinion. You then have to take that opinion and decide how and when and where you want to execute. I wouldn't just blindly let these people make those decisions for you. I know people want easy, but that's where you see these people make big mistakes. Look at all professional athletes and singers and movie stars that have been smoked by their financial advisor or their agent or whoever, because they didn't want to deal with it. They didn't want to address it. They didn't want to learn how to do it. They didn't, you know, they just wanted to go out and dig in the dirt. They didn't want to focus on the books. They didn't want to focus on their marketing. They didn't want to focus on, they just let the lawyer do it or the accountant do it. And then when it all went to shit, they're sitting there scratching their head. Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you. You have to take ownership of all of this, and you have to have multiple advisors. You know, I always said your board of directors on the farm is you got to have a great equipment guy and the guy that can repair shit, work on shit that you trust, that just like crazy trust. You got to have a great person that's handling your taxes and your estate planning that you really trust and you understand, and they've talked to you and walked you through it, and you've challenged them and you've pushed them and you've tried to re-challenge them. And you know, you need that on your team. You need a great agronomist that like you challenge and push and you question him and you make him work, and man, you're a real challenge for him, but that's your guy, and he's your guy and he's on your team. You know, you think that through and you start thinking like that. Who are those people I really need? And I need to be challenging them. Just like your fuel guy, the guy you're buying fuel from. I've listened to so many people tell me that they were going to lock in fuel when we locked in fuel, but their fuel guy talked them out of it because they thought prices were probably just going to go lower and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, why'd you let them talk you out of it? You know, if that was your play and that was your thought, I mean, you can't let somebody talk you out of it because you think they're self, you know, an expert maybe in that field. You have to be willing to make those calls and those decisions yourself and take those risks. So I'm just a huge believer. That's what I'm working on the kids with right now. Just saying, look, I got it. They're older than you. They're probably smarter than you. They're experts in the field. But you've got to say, hey, I appreciate your opinion on that, but here's what we want to do. We're going to go a different direction. And here's why we want to go a different direction. And that, you know, that can happen. That's allowable. That is allowable, and it's definitely something that can happen. So you just have to think of it like that, Todd. You know what I'm saying?
No, and that's all sound advice, brother, and I appreciate it. And we're all guilty of I'm guilty of it, and I think about when I used to give golf lessons, people are guilty of it. But it takes time and effort, man, and discipline to question and stay on top and take ownership, as you say. So
yeah,
it's a good father there. Hey, jumping back into soybeans, then Monday you were still fundamentally bullish, and then yesterday you came out, you said you banked the rest of your bullish profits and bought some puts. What changed?
Yeah, I did, and I'm losing on that. I'm, like I said, losing.
It happens.
Bank the profits on the bullish side. I don't know. I'm just spooked on this whole China deal. Like I said before, I think the yield works lower. I am bullish longer term. I probably overthought it. You know, I'm going to hold these puts here for a minute. I'll count 10 Mississippi, see what happens. Probably overthought it. The bottom line.
Yeah.
So Bessette came out, you know, and announced the operation. I don't know what it is, you know, crush Iran or whatever it is economically. And
right.
They said there for any country, I listened carefully and close, and I even read the docs afterwards. He said any country, it didn't matter. They're going after as far as they're going to have to stop doing business with Iran. And it just squirreled me up on the demand side of things with China being over 50% of our, you know, exports, basically. It's dangerous because every time, I mean, I go clear back throughout my history in trading, China typically, when they get back into a corner like that, you know, they like to pull that ag lever. And as far as, hey, great, we're not buying any more ag from you over here in the U.S. And then we kind of have to back off and da, 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 da. So I was just sitting in my head saying, man, if China pulls one of those little crazy Ivans on this soybean purchases, this market's going to break it's going to break. I mean, you're going to get hit if China were to come out and say that. And I sit in my head and I'm like, why wouldn't China at least just come out and say it? Right? Like maybe they don't do it, but they act like they're going to not buy U.S. beans. Well, right. Look what that would do to price. And then it would give them a chance to come in here and swoop up and scoop up a bunch of beans possibly. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I just got spooked a little bit on that buy side, long side. And I flipped. And like I said, probably overthinking it. And like I tell everyone, and I tell my kids all the time, oversteering is the cause of most accidents in life. Same in trading, you know, oversteering,
yeah.
Meaning just hands on the wheel too much, over trading would be what I would call it. And, I don't know. We'll just see how it works out. I just kind of had a hunch. Just kind of,
yeah.
But no, I'm bullish beans longer term, just because I think that if China and U.S. relations can stay somewhat copacetic here, and neither party loses their minds and blows the deals up, as long as China can stand here buying U.S. beans, I see a strong demand story. I think the crush demand is going to surprise to the upside, like I've been saying. And I think you could walk this yield back some. I know Pro Farmer didn't see that, but I think you could walk this yield back some in beans. And, you know, you start talking to, you know, a sub-250 ending stock number or 200 ending stock number. I mean, there's a lot more room to the upside in the bean market. So my whole worry is China. I just got my eyes dialed in on China and how this is going to go geopolitically. The fallout from the deal with Iran and the Middle East and China. And then hopefully nothing happens. I'm hoping that Trump threads this needle like we've never seen in this meeting at the end of September, stays in place, and that good things come from that. And you know, we're off to the races, you know, look, talking $14 beans. But, you know, maybe. But same breath, I am worried that those trade talks could fall apart. And that's what's got me nervous about pricing a little more corn. You know, I said I was going to price more corn this year a little more early, and I was going to save and hold these beans back a little longer than normal, thinking there would be a nice pop closer to early 2027 than into mid-2027. But it all hinges on how this plays out with the Chinese. And it's I think it's tricky right in here.
So if you had to flip the coin, is there more downside potential for beans from a bigger crop or weaker Chinese demand?
Oh, my gosh, weaker Chinese demand, no question. I mean, even if they bump the hair higher, I mean, if China comes and says, hey, piss on it, we're not buying any more American beans, I mean, we're doing a little boycott here. Well, yo, I mean, you're going to see some, yeah. You'd see a move to the downside. And I'm definitely not saying that's going to happen as of yet. But I just don't know how this is going to play out, like I said, with Iran and the Middle East. And it seems like it's almost like we've tried to take Iran out kind of somewhat peace, meaning haven't tried to just completely annihilate them. But I'm afraid it might be getting to the point that that's what they're going to have to do. And I'm just not sure how China's going to react if we have to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like if it's going to come to that type of thing.
Well, then what good, I mean, you're just, don't you think it's opening the door for a heck of a lot more volatility when we can't even get them to stay at the peace table and keep the strait open, and now we're going to start threatening multiple other countries to do business with them? Dude, that could get ugly fast.
Well, but what's the option, Todd?
Blow, well, I mean, I guess follow through with what you're getting earlier. I mean, I don't know what we're doing, what the objective was, the plan was, but certainly they're still able to be a pain in the butt. Maybe that's okay.
Well, I suspect we thought we could throw a couple of punches. They would realize we're being serious.
Yeah, I did.
And then they would come to the negotiating table and calm down on the nukes and bring things down and take a different turn with the way they're governing and some of the things they were doing. But that wasn't the case. I mean, I think they took the punches in the face and continue to take them, and it really – I don't think it's doing a whole lot. You know, I mean, I think it's – I hate
to – Don't you think
– that's what I'm saying. I feel like Trump's now got to put a submission hold on these people, and he's going to have to leave.
Bingo. Don't you think we can't sit there
know,
and leave a wounded –
I know, but my question to you is, then game that out. If China's sitting over there and they see Trump slip this thing up into a full-blown chokehold and lay into it, are they not going to do anything and just say, oh, yeah, we'll just keep buying beans from you guys? I find that hard to believe they're not going to do anything and just say, oh, yeah, everything's fine. I just don't think that's going to happen. I mean, but
– Well, maybe they factor that – maybe they you know what? I mean, yes, that's an obvious outcome, and maybe that's been factored in. They're willing to take that risk, or they know the Treasury's going to come start buying beans. I don't know, dude.
Maybe Trump, he made a deal with them, and he just takes over Iran, and he just gives them – you know, they can take the oil out of
it. Bingo.
So well, I don't know. Anything's possible.
And this, my last comment on that is this. I mean, just another example of it. At some point, there's going to be pain for somebody to rectify a situation that needs to be rectified. Now, if that means we lose some bean sales to China because we go clean house over there, I mean, gosh darn it, man. They're good. Then we figure out the new normal after that. But we can't leave these wounded dogs laying on the street because they're going to come back and bite harder next time. That's it. I'm done. Whew. Okay, Kevy. Wheat. Now, we've been the same story kind of for a while. That's more of a physical delivery story.
Wheat. I'll just summarize wheat real quick for you.
Yes, please.
You know, the bully story is the wheat's locked up. The wheat's not gone. The wheat's just locked up and dislocated. Wheat can't get out of the Black Sea region. It's making people nervous. You know, there's the war premium that's escalated price. You know, when does that, along with the problems in the Middle East, I mean, it's all adding to the story. But you're a couple of pen strokes away from those stories ending, and then the price probably falling out of bed on you. So I am currently long some wheat. It's been a great trade. I'm still in it. But I am nervous Nelly in it, I'll tell you that. And I'm trading small, and I've got 1 foot close to the exit. So, you know, I'm not going to let this thing get goofy, and I'm not going to let a winner turn into a loser. I promise that. So, you know, I'll probably take some profits here. I took some profits not that a few days ago, and on a small portion, but I'm just saying, you know, I think there, if these problems continue and the wheat stays locked up in the Black Sea, prices keep escalating and stair-stepping higher. I think higher highs and higher lows. As soon as there's a sign that there's an alternative route with the grain out of the Black Sea region or some type of compromise or treaty or something, obviously prices are going to break and some of that war premium is going to come out, and it'll happen in a real hurry. So be careful and cautious along that front. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at. Again, elevated wheat prices don't do anything to help demand. The higher wheat prices go, the weaker demand's going to get. We were hoping that demand was going to increase. We still are, that maybe some of that Black Sea wheat, the buyers in the Black Sea region are going to come here and buy from the U.S. I think that could happen to some degree. But at the same breath, I think overall demand could weaken just because what you're seeing happen globally and with some of the global plays. So net-net, I think demand's kind of stymied. The grain is out there. The wheat is out there. It's just dislocated at the moment. And as long as it stays dislocated, I think the bulls stay in control. As soon as that looks like that's not the case, I would be careful. So I like pricing.
Say it again.
No, I like pricing into it into these rallies.
So is this one of those things like, if they signed a peace agreement tomorrow and it was ironclad, whatever, I mean, is logistic issues such that infrastructure got to be rebuilt, or is it just now channels are open so things would resort back quickly, or could this still be ongoing?
I don't even think sign anything. I think just talk of them signing something would be enough.
Gotcha. Okay.
Or talk of they've got a couple of ways, you know, they're going to create another one of those corridors or whatever they did in the beginning.
Okay.
A peaceful corridor or some shit to get the grain out. And you got to believe, as the media takes hold of this more and more, the whole food thing is going to become an issue, and they're going to press for humanitarian type of play to get the grain out. So that's what I'm saying. Be careful thinking this is just, again, where it stays elevated, because as we've seen before, it don't stay elevated. When it goes pretty quick.
All right, we're going to move on now, and I'm going to blend your favorite thing. I'm going to blend macro and investing here because I want to talk about what the Treasury did recently and stuff, how it's affecting things, but I'm going to frame it this way, and you're going to probably touch on all of it. So you said Monday that you're gaming out a weaker U.S. dollar and more of a basement trade into the year end. Walk us through what you mean by that. How is it influencing where you're putting your capital?
Well, I mean, you're just saying, I don't know.
I was just going to say, I mean, I figured you're going to touch on the fact of, you know, what the Treasury's trying to do to keep the long end of the rates down, what that's doing to the dollar, and you're just how it's all playing out in the precious metals, and that's affecting where you're putting your money now, I bet.
Yeah, I don't think the rate's the issue. I don't think the rate's the concern by anyone. I think, I shouldn't say by anyone, it is, obviously, but I think the overall play of what the current leaders in Washington, and I could be dead wrong on this, but I think the play is weaken the shit out of the dollar, get the dollar weakened, try to incentivize and get the manufacturing, break the current trade deals that are in place, try to drive and get the manufacturing back home here in the United States, build out your manufacturing infrastructure. The only way that happens is by weakening the hell out of the dollar. Keep the dollar weak. Try to grow yourself out of this debt, this $40 trillion debt. And the only way you're doing that, now this is going to get me on a rant that's going to piss a lot of people off. I'm just telling you, Todd. So
do it. Do it.
This might be our Dixie Chicks moment here because I'm just saying, I'm just telling you, it's going to rub you wrong. So I think the AI, let's just put it this way. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. We have to win the AI race. And it's coming down to two people, us and China, right? Two countries. We don't win the AI race. I would say the United States, as you know it, is no longer. Now, that may take 20, 30, 50 years to play out. But I would say there's big problems ahead. And I don't think it's a race. I just think it can't be lost. Because if it's lost, you lose the dollar as probably the reserve currency of the world. You lose total control of the currency. You lose the debt battle. You lose the defense race. You lose it all. You lose it all. And I think China sees that as well. And the race is on. So why is the U.S. dollar the reserve currency? Because this is where all the technology and innovation happens. And money, if you look at the top 20, the top 20 companies in the world, I think 16 are U.S. companies, one maybe in the Netherlands, two, three in China. But that's why the dollar, and that's why America is America. We are the leaders in innovation. We have led the world in innovation since the Industrial Revolution and have continued to. So now all of a sudden we've come upon this new front, AI, artificial intelligence. And the problem is, this is what I see. We have to have that manufacturing. We have to have the manufacturing to build the robots. And to build the robots that are eventually going to be our defense system and be the war. And we have to have the data, and we have to have that to run the AI, and we have to have that to be the leaders in technology. Now, I feel like that's going to be much easier to pull off in a socialist society like China, because they're just going to tell people what's going to happen. Like, here's how it's going down. Here's what's happening. Here's where I'm the asshole. Here's where I become the asshole right here. Here's the Dixie Chicks moment. I'm just going to put it on the line, and maybe people are going to hate me on it. You're going to have to approve these data centers, and it's going to be your duty as an American. And I'm just letting you know, if some point in time, president, somebody's going to have to stand up and take a stance and tell people this, and that's all there is to it. And I understand it. You don't want it in your backyard. Okay, great. I got it. But that's going to be the downfall of our country. Our country was built on people making great sacrifices and sacrifices for the betterment of the country. And I don't want a data center in my backyard either. But I also know that I'd move. I would sell my ground and move. Or if someone wanted to buy it, I would sell it and move. For the betterment of the country, you have to have the goddamn data centers. The data centers are going to be the key to having the data to drive the AI, to fuel the manufacturing, and to fuel the robots, and to keep our manufacturing up to snuff, hopefully ahead of China's. Because if we fall behind, it's lights out. I'm just telling you, there's no way. It plays out over 20, 30, 50 years. We will no longer be the reserve currency. The top 20 companies in the world would then become, more split, or say that edge goes to China, who's leading the AI race. All of a sudden, money is going to go and flow there, not here. We won't be able to get ourselves out of this debt. There's no possible way. The only way to get out of this debt, you can game this out any way you want to game it out. You're $40 trillion in debt, and all your cuts are going to have to basically come from Medicare, Medicaid, defense, and you know, the core one, Social Security, right? Well, you can't cut that shit. So you got one way to get out of it. You're going to raise taxes on people. Okay, you can only raise them so far on so many people. So you got to create a bigger tax base. Well, the way you create the bigger tax base is you become the leader in technology. You become a leader in, you know, business and the world's leader. Well, for the first time now, we've become this nation, I should say, that is all about what we're against, not what we're for. And shit, we're all against data centers, or we're all against whatever it may be. And so now we're all on this kick. Yeah. Data center, bad. Well, I'm letting you know, if we lose this AI race, just I won't be here to see it anyway. It ain't going to matter to me. But my grandkids, it's going to suck. I'm just telling you. So chew on it, swallow it, puke it up, do whatever you want to do. I'm telling you now, and I'll be the guy that takes the brunt of the shit. We better get behind in figuring out a way to be pro data centers and pro this advancement in this technology, or we're not going to be able to, one, we won't be able to control it. We definitely want to be the leader so we can control this shit. I mean, I don't want to be sitting here letting China control all this AI and all these humanoid robots. I want us to be able to have the people to control it. Well, how are we going to do that, Todd, if we can't have the data centers? How are we going to do that, Todd, if we can't manufacture the shit here in our own backyard?
No, the only thing I'm going to say is this. I think you just got your good messaging point to get people to move off their butts and do it, and that is sell them on the, hey, man, if we don't do this, China's going to be telling it. Everybody bitches about China already.
There's no question in my mind if we don't win this race, it goes down. I mean, I'm telling you.
Right.
Put it in your AI shit. Game it out. Play it out in your head. Do whatever. There's no other way it ends. I mean, whoever wins, this is a race. It isn't a question that we have to win the race. We have to win the race. And every week that I learn more and I'm on more calls and I hear more people talk, it's become more and more clear to me. I was adamantly against data centers. There was one that was going to go in by my house out on the farm. And I was, you know, I'm like, no way. I signed the shit. I don't want the data center out here too. I don't want tapping my water, using my electric, blah, 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 blah. You know, Yeah. Well, and then I started, you know, as I learned more and I learned more and I talked to more people and I learned more, I thought, wow, boy, I was a dummy probably there. I probably had that a little bit wrong. And, man, I'm telling you, in the last several weeks, I've really turned my head. And it has nothing to do, I'm talking, this is nothing to do with money or anything. This has to do with the legacy of my grandkids. That's it. So, I don't know. I think people got to rethink that whole deal and better rethink that shit in a hurry. So, that's my rant. I mean, game it out, play it out. You got to have the manufacturing. You got to be able to create the robots. You got to be able to create the AI tools, military tool, all of those things. So, you know you need the manufacturing base. So, you know you got to try to weaken up the dollar. That helps with the exports. That helps with getting that shit built out, and that helps that whole, I should say, flywheel off of that. But at the same time, we know we have to have the ability to control where this AI goes and how much it takes over our lives as humans, and we cannot let that fall into the hands of China or other countries that may have, just other ideas or other thoughts with how things may play out. And that's what I'm saying. China has a decided edge at the moment because socialism allows them to dictate and just tell you, hey, by the way, you're moving out over there. We're bulldozing that apartment complex you're all living in. You'll be relocated over here, and that's going to now be a data center. Oh, you want to say something about it? Great. We'll probably take you and you disappear. So I don't think they're going to have any problems building out their AI infrastructure. They're going to build it out like you've never seen. And a lot of the data you send me, Todd, currently proves that out right now, currently, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so So,
it does,
but I think we can kick their ass. I think we can win, though. I still think we can definitely win, but we got to get all of our people on the same page here, and everyone's got to understand, like, hey. And that's why I don't understand why there hasn't been some, you know, maybe a public announcement of some sort, or maybe they don't want to spook people up or rattle them up. But, I mean, I just don't know why there isn't more pressing thoughts on, you know, how important a lot of this is over the next course of the next decade. And you know, we really got to get behind this to some degree or some capacity. So, you know, maybe our sacrifices as we move forward in life aren't sending our kids into wars. Maybe our sacrifices is we got to give up our land, or we got to give up our homes, or we got to give up something like that. Maybe those are our sacrifices. So I don't know, but I am definitely all for learning more as much as I can about how this shakes out moving forward, because I do think it's a defining moment in American history. And I think it's going to be, I think it's game changing for the world. So I think we're living through it, and we're going to see it play out in real time. And I don't think nobody knows what the hell is going to ultimately happen. It is definitely kind of scary. And, you know, I think everybody's just trying to game it out, you know?
Well, two things. I wouldn't call that a rant. You gave what I think was a very lucid, long-term, as you call, gaming out, playing out, which most people don't do. I unfortunately believe that we are at a point in our country where we are reaping the benefits from all the hard work and sacrifices that were made. So there ain't nobody going to be moving off that couch. And unfortunately, you don't see it. It ain't like someone's dropping bombs on us. You don't see it, feel it. And so by the time we realize that we lost that war, it's going to be too late. So,
And that's the word, right? Because China's great at playing the long game, and you don't know it. You don't feel it. You don't really know.
Bingo. You got nothing happening. Moving you off your trajectory. Yeah.
Yeah, and you've been a guy. You've been against data centers too. I mean, I know you. You've been against data centers early on, correct? I mean,
no, yeah, just watching, just seeing the things, and you've seen the act stuff. And once again, not giving it critical thought like you have been doing for the last, you know, few months.
Yeah, my initial thought, TL, was just here's some bitch running in here, gonna make a bunch of money.
Exactly.
And wipe out my farm or my parents' farm or grandparents'. Kiss my ass and get the hell out of here. I mean, that was my initial take when the data centers thing started to pop up on a few areas where we had some ground, or by them, I should say. They weren't necessarily on them. I never had any crazy offers for any money, let me put it that way. But they were going to be around, you know, kind of close in proximity, less than a half mile. And, you know, that was just my initial thought, like, kiss my ass. You know, I'm all for not eating. Go somewhere else. But as you know, as I've learned more and I've listened more and been around some really smart people, I got it. I had it all wrong, I think, in my head anyway, from where this could potentially lead to. I just hope it isn't too late in the game for us to all get our senses about us here and think how important all this is. So that's all.
Well, it's interesting that there hasn't been, I mean, okay, believe all this, and I do, that there hasn't been more discussion or press releases, in a sense, talking about national, you know, using the phrase national security in regard to that. Or
but I don't think people want to hear that shit, Todd. The media on the left run that.
No. I hear you. So it's interesting. I mean, I'm going to take a deeper dive and do some of that because, yeah, it makes sense. And the point is sacrifice. I mean, gosh darn it, it ain't really sacrifice. I mean, take up and move. I'm sitting here.
You got to give up your farm, you're going to be pissed.
Well, I'm of your camp. If you get, matter of fact, I said that to somebody the other day. I came by because he came by our house because we signed no because they're trying to put a bunch of wind towers up here. Okay, great. And I think those wind towers and the turbines and stuff, I think, you know, started this negative flow of land uses. But anyway, we signed no. This guy's got a farm. I asked him.
Hey. I'll go back and argue this. You even are the one that told me it's going to be all about energy to drive the data centers, to drive AI.
I know.
Okay,
now
voted down the wind turbines because you're
pissed. Okay, because I want nuclear. I want nuclear, small, modular.
Oh, you want nuclear in your backyard?
Damn right.
Hey, oh, really?
If we're going to play, listen, if we're going to live by what if, the what, if we're going to keep three incidences that occurred over the last 80 years, and that's going to
be a nuclear reactor in your backyard than a wind turbine. That's
well, hell yes. You don't see the way, you don't see the nuclear from a land. Listen, if we're just going to be realistic and from a visual standpoint, I don't see the danger in a small.
I didn't say visual. I just said your kids there. Your kids. You're raising kids and families on farms, dude.
Yeah.
You'd rather have the nuclear reactor there than.
Come out here and show me the kids. Where I mean, out here, there's very few. It's crazy, man. There's very few people. A lot of them are not. Well, anyway,
for people that have families and people that have kids,
I know.
I mean, that's what.
You know what? That's hey, listen. They put them in a 19. They put them in where they.
Guys, just sell your farm. Why do you give a shit about it? Because you're not leaving it to anybody anyway, then.
Well, these are all solid points, man. But once again, you got human nature, Bob. And it ain't going to make sense across, like you always say, be consistent. Sure, this one maybe isn't a little bit.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Consistent. You better be pro energy and you better be pro AI and you better be pro data.
No, I don't. I, listen,
you're not
you're
pro
forcing
your grandkids.
Me to,
let's put it that way. You're not pro
right?
grandkids.
You're forcing me to challenge some of my thoughts that I, like I said, I haven't given critical thoughts to. There's been knee-jerk reactions, and I think I'm probably represent a large segment of rural America that needs to think beyond their personal comfort, their personal, and to the, hey, man, this has got ramification. I can't think of the last time I made a decision based on something that's going to happen 10, 20,
well,
30 years down the road.
I know, but like Michelle hates AI. I hate AI. I hate the thought of all this, what it's going to do to humans longer term. Yes, there are going to be some great things come from it. There's going to be some great technological breakthroughs. There's going to be great improvements in all kinds of things. But I'm with everyone. I worry that longer term, I mean, I just think it one day maybe it will be humans versus these AI bots and all this shit and all that could come about. But I know this, because I'm scared of something, I shouldn't just poo-poo it. What I should do is want to be able to control it. And that's what I missed before is I want to just be like, I hate AI. I don't even want anything to do with shit. Get it out of our way. Okay. But what's going to happen is now China is going to say, well, we and then they're going to be the ones that control it. And I don't like that at all. That can't happen. We cannot have that happen. That can't happen. Because that would be the demise of the dollar, that would be, we could have a major problem on our hands with the debt we are running, the debt load that we currently have. That's what I'm trying to say. Now, if you want to see some shit really hit the fan, let that play out, and the dollar gets debunked, and we end up with 12 of the top 20 companies are now Chinese, and we're having trouble getting investors to buy our bonds and our trade and all kinds of shit, and now the debt is really exploding and our tax base is shrinking. Now we would have massive, massive problems and the America you know would be no longer. So I'm telling you now, that can't happen. So I don't think there's any option here but to win that race. We have to win the AI race.
And we obviously will speak more
about
this and then we'll just...
And we won't have to worry about doing any podcasts and shit anymore if we don't win the AI race.
We just had to
China won't allow us. China won't allow us to do podcast.
Well, I mean, China survived being the number two economy in the world. Maybe we can survive being the number two economy in the world. We'll see. But your point's well made. We're going to talk about this more for sure. But tell us where your money is. I know you bought more gold and silver and stuff. What are you doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like I said, that's just a debasement trade. That's just basically saying the dollar's going to continue to weaken. That means your money's going to buy less than it has before. You're going to need to put money. Rather than just having it sitting in cash and getting your face eaten off with the devaluing of the dollar, at the same time, the inflation, running a little bit hot, that's a double-edged whammy on cash sitting on the sideline. You got to find a place to put it. Well, shit, everything's elevated. I mean, land prices are high, collector cars are high, tractors are high. I mean, there's nothing that's a bargain in any way, shape, or form. So, shit, I mean, follow the herd for a while and put more money to work in the metals and gold and silver and, add it to our Bitcoin as it started to move higher. And, I don't know. Hell, I don't know. I'm just surfing the waves at the moment. But it feels like that's the way the herd wants to run, and I'm going to join the crowd for a while.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm with you, brother. Same boat there. Just let me know when that crackfish run that way so I can get up. Hey, so another AI subject came out in the news recently that we're going to start seeing some AI agents, brokers, traders, whatever. And the systematic risk. You guys were doing heavy-duty algorithm stuff back in the day. But going here's where you can rant now. Go on about, you know, let's just say we get into this and everybody's using that same information and making their bets. Now, earlier you had a conversation with me. You said that's a good thing that people, you know, that regular people are thinking they're smart using AI to trade. But if we all do it the same, ain't that going to jack up the markets and liquidity and so on and so forth based on if everybody goes to AI agents to trade?
I don't think it's a good thing that people are using AI to trade. I don't think that at all. I think people make a mistake using AI to trade myself. But sure. Longer term, that's what I'm saying, because then you become a crux to the AI. And that's the whole rant I have. Like I said, you know, the bigger banks are using AI in a large way. And I suspect in the next 5-10 years, their AI models are going to create some very unique and awesome investment vehicles that when the AI spits it out, I think the people at the big banks are going to be like, oh my God, I had no idea. And we didn't even think about it. Oh my gosh, this is so genius-like. And then we're all going to try to put our money in, flood in, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to keep hitting the yes button. Would you like, you know, on your AI, would you like me to give you the next one? Would you like to explore more? Would you like to? Sure. Well, eventually the AI is going to have so much shit in place that we know nothing about and don't understand because it's above our capacity. What happens then? What happens then when there's a meltdown or there's a mix-up? Who, what happens? Nothing. You're going to get annihilated in those product, in those things, because we're not going to know how to unwind them or get out of those messes because we couldn't even understand them when they built them. So I'm just telling you, the more and more reliable we become on that AI, the more and more dangerous things are going to become out here in the general public for us. So like I said, I would be hesitant to become what do you call it? Like that you have to use the AI, you know, that you're using AI to make all your decisions, you're pumping all this shit into AI and everything you're putting into AI and you become reliant on AI. And then before long, I mean, I am agreeing the AI is going to be much smarter than you, but when it goes south or has a hiccup, how are you going to be able then to step in and stop that or correct that or change that when it's so far above your pay grade? I just think that's the longer term where I'm concerned and worried. So I'm not giving my money to any AI agents. I listen to them now. I had invested a long time ago with some AI trading companies, and on my screen in every one of my accounts, I have several of the AI platform ETFs the funds that exclusively just trade by AI, because I want to see the positions that they're in. And it'll show me the top 10, 20 positions that they're in, and that way I can see how they're moving and what they're looking at and what they're gauging. But, no, I'm not looking to have AI control any of my money, at least not that I'm aware of. I'm sure it might be happening somewhere in the back of the bank. Not from what I'm aware of.
Yeah. So let's flip the coin. Give me – we've been dogging AI to a certain degree, kind of. Where do you see AI getting used on for producers or in life in general for organization, finance, whatever? Where does AI fit in your world, or where should it fit in, do you think? Or should be, do you get more awesome, educated?
I think it's an awesome history teacher. I think it does a great job of looking out of the rearview mirror and accumulating data and – bringing that back to you in a quick and easy fashion that's somewhat executable. So, you know, I love the history lessons. I love the, you know, it can tell me if this and this happened, then that happened in the past. And that is to some degree helpful for sure. So I love all that. That's what I'm saying. I'm not dogging it. I'm just saying,
I know you're not.
I think we all need to be aware of what's going to happen here. And I think there's going to be huge potential and opportunity and a lot of economic gain from AI, but at the same time, boy, what a dangerous double-edged sword.
No, I agree. I mean, every tool has its place, and then, you know, as we've seen, every tool that gets built is unfortunately used by somebody for the wrong purposes, so we'll see how it plays out. I want to bring up something that we can apply to our producer friends out there, but Deere's latest results, I think we're a good example of how diversified businesses can absorb, you know, weakness. We saw that their production, precision agriculture business was down, I think, 6%, and their construction and forestry was up in double digits. So the question is this, Kevin. Should producers be thinking the same way? If core farming operations is in a low return cycle, do you think the answer is always to farm more acres, or should more capital be looking for a different return stream?
So, well, I mean, that's right. That's debatable. Just to get bigger, No, I'm not a fan of that. Are you?
Right. No, I think that's the wrong question, but I think a lot of people were pushed that way. Yield, 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 and so more acres meant more yields. And, yeah, no. But I think we're coming out of that. What's my ROI per acre? You've said that ever since I've been there. And, I mean, I'm asking a question I know the answer to, in my opinion, based on what I think you're going to say. It's just, yeah, you got to be looking for diversification. I mean,
if I'm low-cost producer and I own all my ground, yeah. I own all my equipment, and I got no problem going out there and buying more ground.
Correct.
I mean, because, you know, you're going to do it over, you're going to increase your scale, you're going to do it over a broader area, and your profitability longer term probably goes up. Right? I mean.
If all those zips are met, I would agree.
But, you know, if you're not the low-cost producer in your area and you're expanding and growing and adding and levering in, I would be the most worried about being levered up in this space we're going into. And that's, I think, what a lot of people, smart people, are saying. You know, if this debate,
no, I agree.
Inflation stays somewhat hot or elevated, and interest rates stay somewhat here, who knows, maybe even move higher. I don't think you want to be levered up by any means. I mean, the prizes are going to go to the people who aren't levered up, correct?
When do you ever want to? I mean, seriously, though, the more I think about this, like, when do you ever want to be levered up? Sure, it's easy when interest rates are low in there, but I mean.
Well, yeah, there's a time to be levered up.
Yeah, if you know how to get out of it.
Well, you're going to use that to help you grow. I mean.
Okay. You're assuming, you're assuming that people are making logical, rational decisions but I'm just.
That's what happened to all the ag tech startups. Nobody had in their playbook that interest rates on borrowed money was going to go to, in some cases, a lot of these companies are borrowing money at 12, 15%, 18% on their borrowed money.
Yep.
Well, nobody had that in their playbook. So that just shortened the runway down dramatically. So when you're saying leverage doesn't help people, the shit it doesn't, it extends your runway and allows your plane an extra 2 miles before it has to take off. That's a lot different than you got 100 feet of runway to take off here.
No, I know.
So that's where right now, I mean, a lot of these startups, I mean, they can't afford to borrow much money, so their runway isn't very long, so they got to be right quick, and they got to make shit happen. And that's a lot tougher space than being levered up to some, you know what I'm saying, and having a lot of money to fire. And so, you know, that's all I'm trying to see is that if you game this out, you know, and if it's going to be interesting to see how global money flows. You know, if China were to take a more commanding lead in the AI, and there's more worry out there and more things of that nature, and rates have to move higher because we simply can't finance our debt. And I think everyone needs to understand, I mean, if we're going to issue treasury, we're going to issue bonds. You got to have buyers of that. And how do you get buyers of that? You offer a better, higher rate, right? Higher rate of return. Well, did you hear what that is? Higher rate, higher interest rate. So that would mean interest rates would be a little bit higher, or creeping higher, to attract more buyers of the various bonds and treasuries that would need to be issued to finance our government and finance the debt and finance all of our programs that are in place, the Medicare, the Medicaid, Social Security, veterans benefits, military defense spending, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you got to be careful and game all that out, and you can't just say, oh, shit, rates are going to come back down. They're going to be fine. Well, might not be the case. I mean, I want to believe in my head that's going to be the case, but I'm telling you now, you don't want to be, when the music stops, you don't want to be the cat without the chair and all levered up. And that's what I'm trying to tell the kids. You know, I'm like, we've taken out huge loans or getting yourself in a pickle on some lending here in this environment. I don't like the space at the moment for being levered up. That's what I'm saying.
All right. What are you still sitting in cash? Just on a side note of that, because I moved a lot more to cash. I really think the next 6 weeks, maybe we see some, you know, historically the months are bad and different
things.
Oh, still
the same. I still got too much in cash. I got 30% sitting in cash.
No such thing as too much right now. But anyway, yeah, just curious. I got get your thoughts on this, because you wrote earlier this week on the perspective side of things that you think many folks in agriculture suffer from what psychologists call deferred happiness syndrome. I'd say that's everybody in the world. But talk about what that is and why basically and why it's a skill, you know, how to figure out how to enjoy life instead of that. Because, you know, I just want to figure out, you know, how does somebody be aggressive, be assertive, go build it, but then also live in the present? I think that's a fine balance. So share your thoughts on what you wrote in Deferred Happiness Syndrome.
I'm really not sure exactly where you want me to go through.
Well, no, yeah. So remember when I first started working for you, you're like, you're not one of those people, are you? Meaning that, you know, if this happens, then you'll be happy. If this happens, then you'll be happy. Get your next promotion.
Yeah.
You get your next deal. And so, I just want you, you know, I mean, you talked about a lot of you, but just address it real quick. But then I'd love you to touch on how does a person go out and be a baller, like we like to say. But, you know, if you're going to be a baller, that insinuates you're going full tilt. And yet we're sitting here telling people they need to live in the present, so to speak. Not worry about what happens next.
No, I totally agree with what you're saying. I think you just got to be more in the moment. I always preach to the kids. Again, I hate to keep harping on it, but I had people.
Well, how do you balance that? For you personally, let's use you. How do you balance that with, I mean, dude, you ain't nobody more.
Oh, you mean like, hey, getting $250,000, $250,000 worth of cards stolen at the UPS store?
How'd that go for your deferred happiness thing?
Yeah, no, it's fine. And I had several people say to me, like, man, how are you having this attitude still? And I'm like,
right.
Well, my pops would always say, like, well, if I get all down and depressed and in the dumps about it, how am I ever going to make that $250,000 back? So
yeah.
I got to say, not sure why this has happened to me, but it's happened. I got to hope for the best. I got to try and get a smile on my face. I got to try and pick myself back up and get back in there. It ain't a matter of if you're going to get knocked down. Life, you're going to get knocked down
exactly.
All the time.
Exactly.
It's who gets up the fastest wins, right?
So, every time.
That's really all I try to think about. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna go in here and just get shit knocked out. I mean, I did, and I just jumped right back up. So don't think I'm not thinking about it at night or – when I get the downtime, yeah, it's in my head. It's like, gosh, dang. But it's just like Todd with golf. You can't hit a bad shot over into the woods and then let that consume you, and then you just shit up your whole round. You got to let it go. It's over. That shot's over. No more looking out of the rearview mirror. I mean, got to look ahead. You got to try and figure out, okay, that was a shitty shot. Let's get that. Ooh, boy, that was a bad one. And then on to the next. And, you know, and that's how it has to be. And I always love that, you know, I always listen to a lot of people and say, you know, oh, I want to get to the top of Mount Everest. I'm going to get to the top.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get to the top. It's like, oh, interesting. I mean, I had that goal my whole lot, you know, and I finally got to the top. But it isn't the top that matters. It's the journey. It's the prepping for it. And it's all the hard training. And it's the climb up the hill, and yeah, the sight at the top's great, but then you're just looking for the next challenge, you know, and you're on to the next. And to me, it's all about the journey and never about the destination. And I think that's what you have to have, you know, you it's one day at a time. And that's why I say you got to be happy today, because today's your day. Try to make the best of each one of those.
No, it's just amazing how much harder it's come the older we got with the speed of information, the speed of the attention span, and how the advertising people take advantage of that. So, yeah, you got to be intentional and disciplined to make your way in the world
today.
Yeah.
You definitely had to, especially how fast everything's changing now that we get older. I mean, everything's becoming different for us, and so it's frustrating. But
yeah.
It's also, I told Michelle, I'll be honest with you, so my dad passed away of, I don't know, they had Alzheimer's or Lewy body or one of the brain diseases, and it's probably in my family. And I tell people, I mean, my memory's definitely getting bad. I mean, getting worse than it has been in the past, and a lot of things take a lot longer. And I tell Michelle, I start laughing. I said, you know, the cool thing about this is, man, we can go back and watch a lot of movies that we've watched, and shit, they're brand new to me. And, you know, so I just try to make a positive spin on it. And it is funny because, I mean, there is a lot of things that I can tell my memory's getting goofy. And, but I try to just roll with it, you know. Or what would be my alternative to let it get me depressed, beat the shit out of me, beat the shit out of myself about it, try to avoid it? That's crazy. I mean, I'm embracing it. I mean, hey, kind of fun, I guess.
It is what it is. I mean, it's your epitome of it. Exactly.
I just saw it 2 days ago, but to me, I'm seeing new things. I don't know.
I'm being serious. Now, I have not, you know, I respect that you admit those things, you know, about not having the memory in there, and that's why we made some adjustments, but I don't see them. Yeah, you and I talk plenty, not seeing it, because it made me, you know, you got to keep in mind, the ancillary of the old phrase you used to use, that, you know, when you fall out of the basement, you don't got long falls, you can't get hurt, meaning go try new things when you're nowhere. But for you, when you start with the memory you had, and maybe it's less, well, your memory's still, your mind's still functional, 10,000 times faster than most people like mine.
I could definitely tell a big difference, you know, after
I've
gotten older. But it is what it is. And like I said, I don't mind it. Shit, only people it's not fine to, I guess, are people, you know, for me, I'm rolling with it.
I've always been told,
God reshuffles and deals you new hands of cards every day, every other day, and it's our job to just play the cards we get the best of our abilities. And that's what I try to do. So I can't control the cards I get.
Well, I tell you what, that's a good place to exit on, but I will always like to ask you, anything happening next week or anything upcoming that's big, shiny on the agenda? Another week of grinding.
We got a few new tractors in a few weeks ago. We talked about the High Cropper from out in California. And
yeah.
Got that right cutter.
Does he take any of those? Because we're going to be, matter of fact, our podcast next week will be on the road. Is he taking any of those to Farm Progress? Actually, I'm going to be at the Farm Progress show.
I don't know. I don't know if he is or not. Maybe not. I don't know if they are.
Well, if he does.
I ordered a 40-foot gooseneck because our trailer wasn't big enough, and I wanted a gooseneck flatbed anyway. So I ordered a 40-footer, and it isn't going to be in until October. But that 40-footer will haul. Well, it won't haul maybe, you know, it wouldn't haul. It might. I don't think it'll haul 3 40-20s at once, but, you know, it'll haul, say, a 40-20 and a couple of smaller, you know, tractors, like a couple of Ford tractors or something like that. And I've hauled three around on a 40-footers that I borrowed a little bit. But it's nice to be able to do that. But, you know, we got a 60-30 being built by some folks. And then there's a few others that I like the muscle tractor era. I'm still looking for an Alice Chalmer D21 that's all kind of tricked out. I like those. And, you know, there's – got my eye on a couple of 1468s and 1568s on the IH side and Farmall side. But, you know, I don't know. I like 4020s, I like 630s. I like a couple of those old Fords that we went out and got. And, you know, so I like that play. And, yeah, I get some good conversation pieces. The kids take them around to the shows, get some good conversation pieces. And it makes for some good decorations at those outdoor booths and stuff that the kids are at.
Exactly.
So, you know, I like them. I think it's a good fit for us. But there's a couple of big auctions coming up out there that we got our eye on. And didn't we talk to Greg Machinery Pete? He's going to try and be at FarmCon and stuff. I think
he's going to be there and have some good insight. And
yeah, what's happening there next week?
He's going to like your collection. That's going to be good. Matter of fact, I need to call him and just touch base. But yeah, we're excited to have him show up.
You guys got anything? What are you doing? You're going to Farm Progress?
No. We're still we're gardening and still hot as heck out here. So no, nothing big planned, my friend. So we'll be here, man the sport. All right, man. Well, hey, listen, appreciate it. Great episode. Appreciate the insights. Once again, didn't think it was a rant, so can't wait to get this one out to folks, and we'll catch up with you next week then.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you. See you, Tess.
See you.